From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Elodie Reed. It's Tuesday, June 28th. Here are today's headlines.
We're continuing to see reaction to the Supreme Court decision last Friday overturning Roe v. Wade. That sends abortion rights laws back to the states.
First in Montpelier, where the state house was vandalized over the weekend in an apparent response to the decision. Early Saturday morning, someone broke seven windows on the first floor and spray-painted the message, quote, "If abortions aren't safe, you're not either," on the building's front portico. Capitol Police Chief Matthew Romei says he has no plans to increase security at the building.
We just have to defend this as a free speech place, as the front porch of the state of Vermont. We want everyone, no matter their opinion, to feel safe, to come here and express themselves. We wish they wouldn't do it in a destructive manner.
Damage to the historic windows is estimated to be roughly $25,000.
Advocates who work with LGBTQ youth in Vermont say the Supreme Court's ruling raises concerns the court could dismantle other civil rights, such as same-sex marriage and access to birth control. Dana Kaplan leads the nonprofit Outright Vermont. He says the Roe decision sets a dangerous precedent that will impact marginalized communities first.
And really, in a time where, you know, LGBTQ youth and specifically trans youth have been facing, you know, the possibility of hundreds of pieces of legislation across the country that have been targeting their rights and identities.
Kaplan says adults who work with LGBTQ youth can help by providing them accurate information about gender-affirming reproductive and other health care.
Catholic leaders across the country have praised the overturning of Roe v. Wade as historic. But leaders of the faith in Vermont worry it may garner more support for abortion in the state. In particular, the constitutional amendment on the ballot this fall that would guarantee reproductive liberty, including abortion access. Monsignor John McDermott is the Vicar General with the Roman Catholic Diocese of Burlington.
We are still facing very much an uphill challenge, an uphill climb in terms of trying to, we would say, create a greater culture of life so that abortion isn't as maybe as celebrated here as it presently is.
McDermott says the church has a responsibility to provide support for families, such as childcare and housing.
Coming up, a new documentary explores youth mental health. We'll hear more after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to VIDA for their support. VIDA, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit veda.org to start your next chapter.
A new Ken Burns documentary on youth mental health premieres this week on PBS. The film is called Hiding in Plain Sight, and it explores the mental health crisis through first-person stories of young people.
The film is an intimate look at 20 young people who talk openly about anxiety, depression, addiction, hallucinations, and more. Two of the people featured in the film have Vermont ties, including Ricky Davidson. He's now a school counselor in Brattleboro. Davidson spoke with our colleague Mitch Wortlieb. Here's their conversation.
I grew up in a family with issues that many families deal with. Think, you know, substance use, divorce, some domestic violence situations. I also, growing up as a gay young person in a family where that wasn't acceptable. So I dealt with some depression and those kinds of things. And in my early teens, I turned to substances to try to deal with all of the things that I was feeling that I had no other outlet for.
Was there anyone you could speak with growing up? Any close friends that you could confide in if you couldn't talk to your folks or to your, you know, siblings or what have you?
I had like some peers that were friends that may have been supportive, but at the time, I didn't know that. I didn't know they would have been supportive, and I assumed, like I think a lot of young people do, that they're alone. I assumed I was by myself and I was the only one that was going to be able to figure this out.
As I said, you're working now as a school counselor in Brattleboro, so you talk to a lot of young people. Do you ever see somebody who you think may be having a mental health challenge and you can tell they don't want to open up and you have to make that decision about, okay, now I have to push a little harder and try to get them to? Because it can be critical, can't it?
It definitely can be critical. And I think that there are definitely times, especially early on, that everybody, not just young people, but anybody, when they're starting to connect with a counselor or a therapist or a social worker or something, they're apprehensive. So it takes time to build some trust and a rapport where that person, especially that young person, feels like this is somebody I can open up to. And it's a gentle balance between pushing, but not pushing too hard or too much or too fast, but pushing enough to get through to the next thing.
One of the themes that really emerges in this film is how different each person's own experience with mental illness can be. So if you had to describe to someone who doesn't really understand the problem, you know, what is mental illness? How would you describe it?
Well, that's a great question. I think some people who don't quite understand it, maybe never experienced mental health challenges, really thinks about it as I've had a down day, or I've felt sad before, so I must understand depression, or I've been nervous about something, so I must understand anxiety. And I think that it's beyond just sort of normal sadness or anxiety or nervousness or a depression, and it's more of a immobilizing feeling. So it's feeling sad to the point where you feel like you can't move or do anything, or feeling so nervous that you're really stuck, or so angry that you can only make the wrong choice. But it is very individual. Different people really experience it in very different ways.
Because what you just said may resonate with a lot of people who are going through a lot of these struggles. What then do you tell them when you have that feeling of immobilization, as you put it, where you feel you can't break out no matter what you do? How do you advise somebody like that? What is the next step?
I really try to work with them around, okay, you can't take a big step right now. What's a small step you can take? What's the one thing you can do? And let's take that small step, and I'll walk that step with you. And then the second small step may be a little bit easier than the first small step. And then next thing you know, you're taking your third small step, which really adds up to a big step. You made a big step. And really breaking it down into something that feels manageable and doable to break through that stuck or immobilized feeling.
One of the things you talk about in the film is the effect of social media, which is something that folks in different eras really didn't have to worry about. This is a relatively new thing, bringing new challenges. What are some of those challenges, and what advice do you give young people in that regard whose lives often revolve around social media?
I often ask the students that I work with to take some time to unplug, to disconnect from social media, to disconnect from their phone. And on one hand, social media, there are really great social media apps or connection points that can be made for somebody who feels really isolated. At the same time, too, it can be way too much information all at once, or it could be some negative information. You know, we hear about it often in the news where somebody was bullied through social media or things like that. So it's really a double-edged sword. There is some positives that's there, but I often work with my students and say, all right, take some time to unplug. Turn your phone off tonight when you get home, and don't turn it on until tomorrow morning, so that you're not getting bombarded and barraged with a whole bunch of extra information and other people's thoughts and opinions, so that you can decompress, you can let some stuff go, you can process through stuff without all the extra noise.
What would you like to see happen to help improve the resources and the help that's available for people who are experiencing mental health challenges? What's lacking right now?
The big thing that's lacking right now is the amount of qualified people that are available. In my area of Vermont, every therapist and social worker and counselor in the area has waiting lists. That there's people who want and need services and can't get them. There's a lack of beds on either inpatient or residential treatment facilities. So there's people on waiting lists for long periods of time. So there's just a lack of resources when people are ready to take them. Some of the stigma around mental health is getting better. So they're ready to I need help. And then there's no one to turn to because everyone has a waiting list or there's no beds available.
What about that stigma? You say that maybe things are improving a little bit. Do you think that this documentary might be another step in changing people's minds about the way they think about mental illness?
I hope so. I really do. I think that especially the young people in this film did a remarkable, remarkable job talking about their experience and explaining who they are. And if you have young people around you in your life in any way, you can see them in the young people that are in this film, that in some ways they look like every other kid in every other high school across the country, and they're dealing with challenges. So I think that that will help with the stigma a lot, because people will really see people they know in the faces and in some of the stories and some of the experiences that are in the film.
That was Ricky Davidson, one of the subjects of the film Hiding in Plain Sight, speaking with our colleague Mitch Wortlieb.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency. Today, we had additional reporting from Bob Kinzel, Abigail Giles, and Lexi Krupp, and editing from Brittany Patterson.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Elodie Reed.
And I'm Henry Epp. Talk to you tomorrow.